Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside Divis podcast for April 15th, 2022. This is episode number 106. On today's show, we'll be talking about driving the Jeep Magneto 2.0, the reveal of the Genesis X Speedium Coupe concept, and big improvements are coming to the Volkswagen's MEB-based vehicles. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the genteel Tom Logney, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the babyface Clint Simone, video director for Motor One and Inside EV's.
He's really 48 years old.
That's right.
Along with the meticulous Mr. Martin Lee from the recently revamped EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, from where they are producing Fast and Furious videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. All right, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome, everybody. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Hey, guys. And, I want to add something first. Martin, can you please go back to recording live video for EV News Daily?
Oh, okay.
I know you started it up and then you kind of stopped.
Yeah.
I am now getting harassed by my followers who are saying, I know you're friends with Martin. Can you please find out why he stopped recording
the video? Yeah.
So now it's spilling over and interfering with my work. So
I'm sorry.
I need you to get back to start. Everybody loved what you were doing.
You did.
Find the time. Stay up late. Get up early. Something like that. But would you please resume what you were doing? Because everybody loved it.
I'm sorry about my audience. They are all fanatics about electric vehicles, so I can't blame them. But yeah, okay. I'll start it. I might not start it today because it's actually the Easter holiday here. So this is I'm just after sympathy here. I'm actually working on my day off. This is the only work I'm doing today. So I know world's smallest violin and all that, and I know what you're thinking. This isn't really work, and I agree with you. But yes, so happy long. We get 4 days off over here. I don't know if you guys get any time off over Easter.
We work for the same company, and so
we
can get into the semantics of that later.
We get Friday and Monday off. I got a 4-day weekend.
Wow.
There you go.
What days off are. all right. Let's kick it off with our comment of the week, or Katwa for short. So last week, a viewer going by Lance's Beat Axes said, I'm not looking forward to the first time a Hummer EV tries to fit in the spot next to mine at Electrify America. So I understand this concern. My Spark EV would dent if I looked at it too hard, so I'm pretty careful about parking it in places where it could get door dinged. But Tom, any advice for parking next to a Hummer EVs at charging stations?
Just get there first and stay over the line a little bit, and then the Hummer won't be able to pull in.
Oh,
ooh, that's an idea.
Block them. If you see them coming, just block them out. What I want to see are two Hummers parked next to each other, you know, and how close they'll be to use that. I mean, it's just massive vehicles. And this comment came out last week when I think we were showing video of Kyle, right? With the Hummer. He went to Electrify America station, so just saw how massive it was. I mean, it took up the whole store. He couldn't even get out to plug it in. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, that's what Hummers were all about. The first one, the gas version, was ridiculous. And, you know, this one's ridiculous, too. Ridiculous in a better way, but it's still ridiculous.
Two of them next to each other. There's going to be Charger wars if somebody can't get out of their truck. And so we need no more Charger wars. I've already seen a video on Out of Spec of Tesla Charger wars recently. I mean, heck, everyone just calm down a little bit.
So, yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about Hummer in a bit because we haven't heard Kyle's experience with that. But I wanted to start with Clint because we've been accused of not letting our guests speak soon enough on the show. But then
not
again,
by me. Here. You guys are fiery this morning. I'm just sitting back and listening.
But since he's been on the show and he works before and he works with us, I mean, is he even really a guest at this point? I don't know. But regardless, Clint, you had a great first drive experience with a very special vehicle this week in Moab. So why don't you go ahead and tell us about the Jeep Magneto 2.0 or Magneto? How do you say it?
Yeah, Magneto. Magneto. I'm not the world's biggest Marvel guy, but I hear that it's a comic book character. That's probably a bad way to start this off with people disliking me right away. But they've used this name on two different electrified concepts for an EV Wrangler. So I'm wondering if it'll actually make it to production, to be honest with you. I don't know if they have the rights to it, but I guess that's an aside. Magneto is an electric Jeep Wrangler, obviously, and it was one of several concept cars that Jeep unveiled this year for their annual Easter Jeep Safari event. Last year, they came out with Magneto. They didn't even call it 1.0, but that's what it was. And it had horsepower that mirrored that of the V6 model. So horsepower under 300, very rudimentary battery tech that didn't quite make much sense. A lot of that is the same, but for 2.0, they kind of went bananas with a couple of things. It has 625 horsepower, over 800 pound-feet of torque. Jeez. There are four different battery cells just kind of spread throughout the car wherever they could literally fit them, including right underneath a hood bulge, which is insane. 40-inch tires, extreme off-road hardware, and then a 6-speed manual transmission that works with an electric powertrain. So this is a weird, fun vehicle that should end up in a museum at some point. And Jeep says it is a working laboratory toward an actual production electric Wrangler. I believe them with some of it and not at all with other parts of it. They've already confirmed that a manual transmission would not make it to production in right. such a car, which makes a lot of sense. And it's a weird thing to experience in person. But the rest of it kind of lays down the groundwork for the fact that this is going to have to be a very serious off-road vehicle when it does, you know, enter production, hopefully within the next few years here. Jeep is getting closer and closer to electrification. You have the example of 4xe, obviously, but yeah, it's a neat car, and it was fun to get the chance to drive it off-road in Moab.
So what was the highest gear you got it into?
So you can start it in any gear. There's enough torque to start in any gear, and it doesn't limit the torque, but you do right. have to physically shift, and you only need the clutch to move the gear lever. Otherwise, the clutch doesn't serve a purpose. So that in and of itself is very strange. But we had it in low range for rock crawling. So there is a transfer case in it as well. It's only a single motor. It's not a dual motor. And I know you guys know more than I do, but over 600 horsepower in a single motor is not a typical setup. I know that. And it's mounted to the front axle, but there's a transfer case to move the power around to all four wheels.
Right. So it's like a single motor with a traditional four-wheel drive gearboxes and drive shafts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. This was a Wrangler Rubicon in its first form. I believe it was a 2018 model because they sat on this thing a little bit before the pandemic, then didn't get to show it off for a little bit longer. But this car drank gasoline once upon a time. So it really is kind of a strange Frankenstein EV conversion, which, like I said, will not represent production in a lot of different ways. But I believe Jeep when they say that they're using this to test in real life. They make these concepts every year. They bring their engineers out to the event, and they are doing the trails with all of their enthusiasts that are out there by the thousands, learning things as they go.
So how big a battery is it altogether?
It's huge. I believe it was a 70 kilowatt hour battery.
Okay, that's a lot of battery. So yeah. So how fast does it let you drive it? Like,
not very. Okay. I said it's capable of it, but yeah, there's only one of these right now. So it'd be fun to get it going in a straight line. You're at the limitations of 40-inch tires, even if you did, and that would be precarious to say the least. But low-speed rock crawling, EV torque, you just can't beat, to be honest with you. There were two specific things that I thought just felt much better. The second being hill descent control, but in reality, it was just the regenerative braking. I know Kyle, I'm sure, has driven tons of different cars with gas-powered cars that have hill descent control, which normally works fine going down a mountain, but this was so much smoother just to actually have the brake regen work in place of a full hill descent control system. So that's something I'm really looking forward to driving with more off-road specific EVs too. There's just a smoothness to this thing that, you know, if you're in low range with a gas engine, things get kind of jerky, but something about this was really neat. Not to mention the fact there's no doors on it and you can't hear an engine. So all the noises around you were cool to take in as well.
So I don't know. Anyone else have some questions? I like this 40-inch, this overall diameter, right? 40-inch overall diameter?
On the tires?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's a 12-inch stretched wheelbase over a standard Wrangler. So it's somewhere between Wrangler and Gladiator.
So that controlled descent thing, that's like, but in the, so the Hummer had a similar thing, but they, in terrain mode, it uses the mechanical brakes to kind of do that kind of work, you know, like inching down. It's like mechanical brakes. They don't, so I don't know, Kyle, how does that work? Like,
yeah, the motor's just regenning. He just has it in a super low gear ratio, so the motor's up and spinning, and they just, you know, pull it back just like you would when you slow down in your electric car at home. And it's magical off-road when you get to experience that, because like Clint was saying, you know, a lot of the hill descent control features use you know, just physical ABS pumps to modulate the brakes, and you have the flap going back and forth, so you're going the whole way down the hill and it's grinding and making all this noise. In an EV, it's just nice, smooth deceleration holding you back. It's great.
Plus the added benefit of getting a little bit of power back into the batteries, you know, in small bursts. But the regen on this was so strong that even at a, you know, fairly strong angle downward, the car would come to a complete stop. So you actually had to be on the accelerator pedal more than you would, because normally just the sheer momentum of it would keep you going down. But super interesting. They no backseat in it. They tore apart the interior. Actually, the gas gauge works to show the state of charge in the vehicle now. So Jeep knows how to have some fun, that's for sure. And they're really proud of this. And I believe them when they say they'll do an electric Wrangler, because they know that it would have to do better off-road than either the Rivian or the Hummer. And frankly, just based on the size of the Wrangler alone, I think there's high potential for that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's got the shorter wheelbase than like Rivian. I don't know if is it the same width as the Rivian?
Yeah, they're probably similar, to be honest with you. I'm curious to see the like how big of a tire they would actually put on a production truck. You know, probably up to 35s, I would wager.
Right.
Clint, did they talk at all about, say, what systems they're hoping to learn about with this? Because it seems like it's so far removed from what would be a production vehicle. What are they learning? You know what I mean? It almost seems like it's such a one-off. There's almost nothing that would then translate over to production.
You would know about the cost of creating an electric vehicle more than I, but it makes me wonder, will they go for the more traditional setup, put a motor at all four wheels and control the torque that way? Or do they lean into what they know and use something more traditional? Is this going to have solid axles on it, which would make no sense to me? But it's also a Jeep, and those are the things that they've done for decades that have worked so well. How far away from the DNA do they want to stray? So to answer your question, I think the biggest thing they're testing is their faithful who buy Wrangler after Wrangler are looking at this. How far from the generations of Jeep are they going to take this thing? And I actually don't know the answer to that. I think a quad motor setup or something like that with a traditional battery pack under the floor makes the most sense. But then again, they could surprise us and do something completely strange that doesn't make sense in the traditional EV world just to please their masses a little bit more.
Yeah.
Well, I would imagine in a year or so, they're going to be doing a lot of focus groups with Rivian owners and asking them a lot of questions about what they like and what they didn't like. So at least if they were smart, they'd be doing that.
I think they've been pleasantly surprised by how well 4xe is selling. I mean, it's selling pretty well. And I know that there's good price incentives to get that compared to other Wrangler models. So it makes sense. But that has a very bite-sized version of what an electric Jeep would be. You know, you can off-road in full EV mode for a short burst of time. So I know they're learning from that as well.
It's hard to me, for me though, to judge sales today, because with the shortage of vehicles, everything that ends up on a lot is being bought. So people could be getting the 4xe that didn't even want it. They wanted a Jeep, and that was the only one that was available. So I think it's hard to get excited about how well it's selling now, because quite frankly, whatever they make that ends up on lots is going to be sold. So,
yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. But one way or another, some of these people aren't going to be first in line to buy something electric. So the fact that they even do, maybe they get used to plugging it in every night and say, hey, I actually kind of like how this works. So
no, it might absolutely. I've always said that that's part of the magic with plug-in hybrids. Even if they're not great vehicles, they get people into a plug-in vehicle that wouldn't have bought one. And then it normalizes plugging in. And after a while, they're like, oh, yeah, it's not bad. You know, and a lot of people that would have never bought an EV, now all of a sudden, after the lease is up on the plug-in hybrid, they're like, yeah, I think I can live with a full electric now. So I think that's going to happen with some of the cheap 4xe owners.
It's a weird vehicle, but you know, in my head, they're a bit closer production than an electric Bronco or some of the other traditional super hardcore off-roaders getting there. I know the Rivian can off-road. I know the Hummer can off-road, but you know, we're still lacking a traditionally capable vehicle off-road in this space.
Well, Kyle, you drove the Hummer EV. Like I talked about driving it last week, on the show, but you couldn't join us last week. But so I was hoping maybe you could tell us a bit about your experience with the Hummer and like how did you think it did off road?
Yeah, so I actually elected to not drive the Hummer off road. I rode and observed mostly because, you know, for our YouTube videos, it's I Drive X for the first time. And I was like, well, everyone else is going to drive it off road. I don't want to do that. So, you know, GMC was nice enough to let me take the truck, do my own thing with it for the second half. So I was able to ride in it off-road, but I would say like that was like a driveway here in Colorado. That was not off-road. Come on. I mean, we had a couple little like flexing it out, but we weren't like really wheeling the thing. So I would say, yeah, it's wide and big and certainly is too big for the trails here that we run on very often in Colorado. I mean, where we are, you know, narrow stuff, short wheelbase, you know, like a two-door Bronco is about the best thing you can get to go through anything. You know, same with a small JL Wrangler. And so, yeah, I guess the off-roading didn't blow me away so much because it's got big suspension articulation. It's got big tires. It's got big power. It's going to do that. What blew me away was just how this thing drove on the road, because it's actually hilarious. Everything about this truck is wild. It's way too fast in watts to freedom, which is amazing. You're roasting all four tires from a launch. You know, you stop, you stare literally straight at the ground under full brakes. You can't go around corners very quickly because it weighs so much. So you put steering lock in and you just reach the limit of the tire and it's makes a good like 18 wheeler truck tire squealing noise. And yeah, I mean, like it's just mental, everything about it. And I kind of love it. And I hate that I love it, but I really do love it.
Right. I was kind of the same way. You know, you can't,
oh, crab walk. That's the best part.
Oh, really?
You could crab walk everywhere.
Is that not just a gimmick? I thought that was a gimmick when they launched it, and then Tesla copied it with the Cybertruck, and I'm like, is every truck going to have crab walk now, and is it even useful? But
oh, I didn't see that the Cybertruck had crab walk. I saw it had rear steer, but I don't know.
Oh, maybe. Well, okay, maybe correct me in the comments if I'm wrong, because I thought that's one of the reasons why they... Not one of the reasons, but they said it's delayed until 2023 and they're adding new features to the Cybertruck and it's going to...
that's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is.
They did not have that thing ready to go at all.
I don't know if it is crab walk now that I... No, I think it is. I think they are adding that.
Well,
but
Ford is actually looking into it too for a couple of different reasons. They've taken different angles off of crab walk and they're going to make their own version of it.
Okay. So, I mean, well, maybe it's useful.
If you have rear steering, why not be able to do the most amount with it?
Yeah.
So that, which is great. But like, I loved it just driving through neighborhoods because I was just like,
just because.
And is it, Kyle, isn't it the weirdest sensation?
It's a weird sensation.
When I did the early engineering drive, and we talked about this on the podcast 6-7 months ago, I was just laughing driving because it just, it's freaky. Like as you're driving, the whole vehicle's going sideways and it shouldn't be. You've been driving cars your whole life. You've never felt that experience. It just, it feels like you're in a mudslide and that the ground is pushing the vehicle. It's so funny. It's
like you're driving a forklift.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent to being like in mud ruts where you have like half the car on one side and the other side and you're just like crabbing along. And it's amazing. And so we're going to do a video when we get one where we only crab walk. I mean, that's the only way we're going to get around. Because
I like to see you going through the Starbucks drive-thru.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll take out the Starbucks drive-thru. We just drive right into the building. I mean, you'll knock everything over with this thing. It's awesome in all the wrong ways, and I kind of like that.
Yeah, too big for the trails, though. You are not wrong about that.
Yeah, way too big. We the guys who were driving our truck didn't damage anything, but some of the GM guys were in front of us and others, and they were damaging the trucks. And I was on the first wave, so I don't know what that thing looked like. They had 120 journalists drive this thing, so I can only imagine how these eight trucks, however many they have, looked at the end of this program.
They weren't afraid of us driving in the bushes and whatever, you know, like scratching up the paint. It's like,
yeah, they did not care about the paint.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I really liked it. I thought it was an interesting thing. I think for the money, you get a lot of truck. You get a lot of weight for the money. That's for sure. If you look at pound for dollar, this has to be one of the best values out there.
You see this week, they sold one for almost $300,000.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So their markups are like insane. So you know, when you start factoring that, it's not worth it. But a friend of mine got his at sticker and his Rivian on the same day or one day apart from each other.
Really? Anyone we know?
No.
Okay. So you know someone with a Rivian and a Hummer?
Yeah, I shot with his Hummer in Michigan. We'll have a video coming soon.
Okay.
That's very cool. Somebody put somebody got 140 for a Rivian R1T with 103 miles on the clock on Cars and Bids. So that's like a $62,000 premium for having driven it 100 miles, which they probably didn't even drive it that far. That's just been driven to the charger and back or something. And it makes me a little bit sad because I want these early trucks and cars, the early Lucids and et cetera, to be driven by people who are enthusiastic and enthusiasts and want to just play with it 24/7. But I guess if you say to me, well, you can pay 60 grand off your mortgage and be without that car, okay, well, probably that's, you know, welcome to the party. But
yeah,
did you see what Ford's doing?
No.
To try to stop that? They're sending their dealers a contract.
Can they do that?
I don't know if they can, but they're sending their dealers a contract to have the buyers sign, basically saying you can't sell it within a year. I don't know if that's, I'm going to buy the vehicle outright. So I'd be able to sell it before they even knew it was sold. But I guess if you went through Ford Motor Credit and then, you know, they hold the title and you're trying to sell
it. Well, they did this with the Ford GT as well.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, but it's a non-compete of sorts where you can't sell the vehicle. And honestly, a Ford GT owner wouldn't finance it either for the most part. So I don't think it has to do with owning the vehicle outright. But you can install those sorts of things. I'm assuming you can put most things in a contract.
It's just curious. Like, let's say I decided I get my Lightning and in 6 months I decide I get the Rivian and I'm going to sell the Lightning and keep the Rivian, and Kyle will be very disappointed if that's what happens. But
I don't know about that. I think I got one right here now.
Okay.
Not mine, but we're working on it.
All right. Well, maybe you have other options. My bidding prices are going down, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's say I were to decide to sell and I sold it in 6 months and then Ford comes after me. How bad does that look for Ford? I just lost my job, so I can't afford the truck anymore. And so I sold it, you know what I mean? And now big Ford is coming after me because I sold a vehicle that I signed an agreement that I wouldn't sell within a year. Like how, you know, what a PR nightmare that would be if Ford went after owners that bought the trucks.
Who keeps a car for a year anyway?
Yeah.
Most people.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, I can see
most people.
If I were to buy it and then immediately put it on sale for for $150,000. Yeah. Okay, I get that. But let's say in 8 months I decide I can't afford it anymore. My financial situation changed, so I'm going to sell it. And now here comes Ford coming along, telling me, no, you can't sell it. You signed an agreement. You got to keep this thing. Like, I just don't like. It's different with the hypercars, Clint. You know, this is a pickup.
Yeah,
truck.
That's pretty easy to enforce when you've sold 20 of them in the last 6 months.
But so I wonder if this is just kind of like something to make people think twice about reserving it, just so they can flip it. More so than it's really going to be enforced and they're going to do it.
Should worry about dealers not marking up their vehicles and maybe lay off the consumer a little bit. But that's what I'd like to see is more OEMs going after their dealer franchises saying, we need to knock this crap off.
Ford, there's some crazy markups up there.
Is trying to, I think, more than any of the other OEMs. They're making an effort to, but Clint, there's very strong dealer franchise laws in this country and NADA, you know, has a very strong lobby. They're independent franchises. They can charge what they want. So that's a tough uphill battle for the OEMs to be able to have control over them. But Ford is trying to figure out a way to get around it with this, making two different divisions, and they're going to do direct sales that do go through the dealerships, but with set pricing, and they're trying to figure a legal way of getting around that. So
they should. So many people try to buy Ioniq 5s and other cars that they're seeing us review. They're excited about them. And then they send us an email saying, I went to my local Hyundai dealer and there's 10 grand on it or whatever it is. It just ruins the whole process.
No, VW did the same thing this week in Germany. So VW in Germany put the ID4, ID5 on for direct sale and a direct finance through VW. And the ID3 starts soon in Germany. And they made a very big point of saying, oh, no. But the dealers are very much a point of contact for customers. They'll be there for service. Don't worry. But all these car companies are trying with EVs to use it as an opportunity to have that direct relationship with the customer. But you know, as you know, EVs tend to be more reliable, certainly in the long term. When they go wrong, they tend to go wrong spectacularly. And if it's not, it's something that you can either do yourself at home in the garage or your local independent guy. And when the traction battery goes, then the OEM's the only really option for you. So I don't see that service is going to hold up many of the dealership models. But then again, to be honest with you, I don't know how they've been paying the bills for the last 2 years because I don't see many people selling many cars at the minute. There's just such a real shortage of new cars and therefore used cars. Prices are crazy. I'm just selling my Zoe. This is not a job ad. A car ad. I won't say where I'm selling it, but I've just put my Zoe on. And to be honest with you, it's 2.5 years old and I've lost almost no money on it. And I've not even gone big. I've not even gone big with the price. I've gone very, very average because people kind of know who I am. I have a channel and I, you know, promote EVs and I don't want to be like, oh, that guy's trying to rip people off with another $2,000 on the price. So, I'm trying to be a little careful with, what do they call it? Personal brand. And so I've gone very, very middle ground and I've still not lost any money in 2.5 years, 18,000 miles of my Zoe ZE40, which I put on sale Tuesday this week. And it just seems, but that's just the market right now. So I don't know how these dealers have been paying wages for 2 years because no one's selling cars.
I mean, I don't know why you didn't put like a $2,000, you know, premium on that because it was owned by Mr. Martin Lee. You know?
On top of the two. So
Dom, don't even go that way. I saw the ad that Martin is running for his car. For an extra $500, he'll sign the sun visor in a marker.
This is true. This is true.
So, you know, he's acting over there like he's.
I have it ready.
You know, exactly. So there you go.
It's only 500.
For 500 bucks. And, you know, and that, what was it, Martin? An extra 250. You'll take a picture with the new buyer.
That's right.
Just with your arm around them. So there you go.
We'll get it framed as big as you like. We'll put it on your wall. So every time you walk upstairs, you see that picture. So look, I'm happy to do the deal with whoever.
So, serious question though, Martin.
That was serious. I'm deadly serious.
So that Renault, the Zoe, how did the battery work for that? Did you lease that battery or is that part of the car?
It's battery lease. It's battery lease. It's £59 a month. I forget. It's like 8 or 10,000 miles a year. I'm not sure Renault even check. If I went back with 10,001, they want out of that. They keep calling me with prices to buy the battery out. And I'm like, stop calling me. I think it's an inconvenience now for Renault, or Renault Financial Services, whatever, whoever owns the battery. I think it's just a faff for them now. You can't buy a new Zoe with a runner, with a lease anymore. They're trying to get out of that, like early Leafs stop doing the lease. It's worked fine for me. It works well for a lot of people because it's money off the sticker price of the car. But it's interesting that they're offering me buyout on that. But so I just looked at the prices of the delta between the two. So if I can buy that 40 kilowatt hour pack from you, and it's £4,000. Well, the I version of the Zoe, so mine's on for 15. Like it wouldn't go to 19; it would go to like 18. So it's not in my interest to do it. And I think they know that. So give me a call when it's a grand, or the next owner, and they'll probably do it. But I'm sure Renault want out of that business. I'm not sure. I suspect Renault want out of that business and are trying to call owners and say, hey, we'll offer you a buyout on that. But transferring the lease is super easy. There's all the Renault forms. They're just the new owner fills it out and takes it on.
Because I could probably pick up a Renault Zoe battery at a junkyard like real cheap. And so I'll buy your car, but I don't know. So if someone wants to buy your car, but they don't want to buy the battery, what happens then? Like take it out and leave it at a Renault dealership?
Package deal, I'm afraid. My friend, package deal. You've got to take the lot.
Yeah?
Yeah. So. Okay.
You can't get out of the lease, Martin, right?
I mean, no.
It's not, yeah, so it's like...
No, I can't get out of it. No, yeah. I can't. Well, I can't Martin, offer Martin them a buyout.
Martin would sell you the car, Dom, and you'd leave the battery in his driveway and he'd have to keep making the monthly payments.
Oh, man.
But that's interesting. I haven't got the running order open on the screen that I'm looking at, but I don't know if VinFast is on the running order today, but they released the pricing for that this week. And I've got to be honest, I want VinFast to work.
Yes.
I want new entries to the market to work. I'm not sure offering US drivers 300 miles a month, or then you've got to pay per mile. I don't know. Again, I'm the odd one out here. I'm not where you guys are, but from talking to my US listeners over the last 4 years, I don't think people are going to take nicely to being charged 15 cents a mile after they go over their 300. It seems in a country that big where you love your road trips and stuff, I don't know if that's going to work or not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll work.
Yeah. No, I'm kind of like,
no, that's just dumb. It's not, that's really freaking stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no way around it. I drove to the grocery store the other day. It was 820 miles round trip because I went to the one in Vegas.
Well, you live in New Orleans, so that's a bad example.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm not a good use case of this, but I think of like my mom, who's like the general, I would say, average user, has a short commute to where she needs to go. She doesn't go on road trips. She just goes to work. And when she has to go somewhere, she flies. She drives, I think, 1,500 miles a month or 1,200 miles a month. You know, she's doing about 15,000 miles a year. No one's going to buy, especially an electric car, and just never drive it.
Right.
And that's what it would be. It would be never driving it. So yeah,
that's dumb.
Like
that's
300 dumb. Miles. It's just, I don't know. I think they have to revisit that.
Well, just look at other leases in the U.S. We've come accustomed to 10,000, 12,000 or 15,000 miles a year. That's how our normal leasing structure works. Which of the three do you want to go for? And then you pay 15 to 30 cents a mile overage charge. Yeah.
And that's a bad penalty too. So have that out of the gate.
15 cents is ridiculous. If they said 300 miles and then it was a penny a mile over, maybe.
15 cents is actually a good price, Kyle. Quite often it's 20 cents.
No, I know. But I'm just saying this for 300 miles, you're going to be paying that a lot.
What is the price after 300 miles, though? I didn't read that. Do you know what the mileage penalty was, Martin?
Cents. Yeah, that's what I said. 11 cents for the VF8 and 15 cents for the VF9. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, so, because you're going to blow through that 300 miles in a day for some people. Yeah.
I don't think that model works anywhere, but particularly not there.
VinFast as a whole works.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the idea was they want to make it affordable to get into an electric vehicle, like a family
and then SUV. Run you out of money once you buy it.
You're going to pay one way or the other. There's no way around it.
I don't
you're going to pay for the battery.
It just complicates everything. Just like we just one payment and one thing. And,
it starts at 40,700.
See, if they really want to come into our market and they got money to burn, which it sounds like based off this Vietnam trip they sent 100 journalists on, they got money to burn. Just have a set price per month with no mileage cap for like a year to get people accustomed to the brand.
So is the 40 grand, are you allowed to drive it at that price?
I did just see that somewhere. there's something in at the bottom of our or the Inside EVs article. It's called fixed. Oh no, flip. Hang on, let me find that while you carry on.
Another.
Oh, here you go. Here you go. It's $160 a month for the VF9, and it's unlimited mileage. So there you go. You're right. So that they are doing that. They just it wasn't the headline.
But that's for the battery subscription, not yes. for the car.
Yeah. Right. No, it's battery that's subscription.
That's on top of your regular payment.
Yeah.
It's all rolled so confusing one thing, and so dumb. Because remember it's when Smart confusing. Tried to do the battery subscription in the U.S. and then they sold the cars and everyone in the U.S. was like, well, I'm not signing that. Good luck to whoever the first person is on this. And I bought a Smart that was originally sold with a battery subscription, but the guy in the middle of that, because I was the third owner, decided to just not pay the battery subscription and it ran out. But like, I was like, come on, Smart, try and take the battery out of my car. I got the legal ownership of this thing.
Yeah.
So I think a number of people tried to, you know, raise a point with VinFast last week on the trip because they asked for, you know, people's ideas or comments or whatever about everything, the model and everything that they were doing at the car. And, you know, like people are skeptical about the whole thing. They raised that with them and, you know, there's some pushback. They seem pretty set on doing this, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah, but they might do it, but we don't know if they'll do it well. And I'll just say, based off my experience seeing the cars, hearing how they drive from other journalists, it doesn't sound that great at the moment.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they have a huge...
And I will also say they tried to pay us to make a review so that we would match it with what they wanted to say, which we turned down.
Good.
Right.
And by us, I mean out of spec, which we... And that just seems so shady to me. So the whole thing seems shady.
They Electrify America put their deal, their press release out this week about the charging deal. So I saw that and thought this is interesting because, you know, VW, the ID4 has got some, the BMW iX, that's got some 30-minute charges for like 2 or 3 years. VinFast and Electrify America will offer you 2 free 60 kilowatt hour sessions. And after that, it's available. You get access to the EA network through the VinFast app. And as I said on my podcast, it's not like Electrify America is a closed ecosystem. Everybody gets access to it. So it's like somebody somewhere has made, I think, a couple of decisions that perhaps either need walking back or heads need knocked together, because that I'd rather not have an EA deal than to say, oh, you get access to Electrify America. Your first 2 charges are free. It's like, what's... That's not even worth the paperwork or the meetings that you've had to organize it. Right. Like, come on.
It's a great deal for Electrify America because it guarantees that all the VinFast owners will download the app and get an account. So it actually is great for them because
cost of acquisition. Yeah, cost of acquisition for a customer. Yeah,
that's fantastic. But before we really, and I thought it was a joke when I saw it too, but before we go crazy on VinFast, you know, Ford's deal with the Mach-E wasn't much better.
What was that?
Yeah.
It was like 1,000 kilowatt hours or 500 kilowatt hours.
It was 250 kilowatt
hours. 250 kilowatt hours.
That's rubbish.
Nothing. I blew through that in a day.
The Mach-E with extended range is 100 kilowatt hour battery pack, more than that to fully recharge it. So you're only getting 2.5 full recharge.
Hey, I'm on the camp of don't provide free charging. It disincentivizes the use of DC fast charging networks. I just think pay to play.
Yeah,
more free charging.
100%. I don't know about these free charging deals.
Yeah, it's so bad.
Hate these free charging deals. And really? I tell it's so funny. I'm so rude when we go on the press drives and they announce like, oh yeah, and our car, you know, is going to come with 3 years of free charging on Electrify America. You know, when the presentation's over, I usually talk to the infrastructure people and like berate them about doing that and telling them you're the reason why the charging stations are clogged up by people that don't need to charge. I pull up to charging stations now and they're getting more and more filled. We've been talking about this for a while.
Yeah,
and so I talk to the people and half of the people there don't need to be there.
Yep.
They live like 5 miles away and they have a charging station in their garage.
Oh.
But they got 3 years of free charging. So shit, I'm going to come here once.
Yeah, you might as well.
And plug in.
That
and
happened I'm to driving, us the other day too.
I'm driving for 3 years for free. But
yeah,
it's horrible. I literally like dress down the people from the companies. I know they get mad at me because I'm like, you're the reason you think you're helping adoption. It's helping you sell a couple EVs, but you're actually shooting yourself in the foot because your customers are going to be mad when they're on a road trip and they pull up and they have to wait 45 minutes because there's five locals charging on their free charging plans.
Mm. It happened really the other day. We were filming the EV6 for the Inside EVs channel, and there were three. So I'm going to point a specific figure here: three Mercedes EQS models, and that's like filling a kiddie pool with a hose. That's a big battery. So they were just perched up there for quite a while.
And those people. I'm really getting red now.
This is great.
Charge to 100%.
Yep.
Yeah. They do.
Sit there for two hours and charge for 100%. I'll be looking over and they'll be at 93% reading their e-reader. And I'm like, I need to do a recording. It's my weekly. I come here once a week and I fill to 100%.
You need to do some more charging seminars, my friend. I would wager that majority of people don't even know that the charging rates slow down the more full it is.
And they might not, but they don't care. They're getting their free juice.
Yeah,
that's true.
They're sitting there and wait. They're in their car.
Devil's advocate, if all the damn machines worked, then that would also help.
EQS owners, they have to have their own garage too, right? I mean, they can afford to buy an EQS.
Yeah.
They probably have a driveway they can plug in at home.
That was the craziest charging experience I ever had. Three EQS models next to us. All three owners obviously didn't know each other, came from an S-Class lease.
Wow.
Wow. You went and chat with them?
I just asked them if they looked at the car before they were able to get in it. Because just from a looks perspective alone, I question your decision. But they all three loved them.
What are you saying? You don't like the styling of the EQS? Is that what you're saying, Clint?
I got in trouble because I said it looked like an egg laid on its side.
But I tell you, why would that get you in trouble? So that's accurate. It's the same styling EQE, but the fact that it's smaller, it just works. Yeah. So
EQE looks way better.
I don't know about that.
Brett drove the EQE this week. I kind of wish he was here to talk about it. What's that?
Kyle, it doesn't look worse. The bar is pretty low.
I agree. It doesn't look worse than the EQS, but I don't think it looks any better.
I think the proportions make it look a lot better.
It could be so much better, though. I mean, like, you don't have to have a... I mean, this kind of...
The proportions do look better. Tom's right.
Yeah, the proportions.
That's just plain ugly. I don't know.
Taycan looks far and away better than Panamera, so we know it can be done. It's not like your EV has to be worse looking.
Right. And what was that, the Lotus Eletre last week? You know, all kinds of swoopy stuff in here and there, and it's, you know,
well, that looks like garbage too.
Yeah.
That
well, didn't look
you
good, don't like it
because you have a bad taste, but
we know that.
Anyway, I wanted to talk about something else here. Kyle, you had the Rivian R1T and a Porsche Taycan on a dry lake bed, and you have a video on out of spec reviews.
Yeah, went on
that, with that. Yeah, and that was a great video. I enjoyed it. So tell us what your takeaway is from running wide open. I guess you rode them both at full speed.
Yeah, we were just like, what should we do this morning? I'm like, there's a dry lake bed over there. Let's go be idiots. And so we were already in Vegas because we raced five electric cars from Fort Collins to Vegas, putting the CCS network against the Tesla Supercharger network.
Oh, yeah, I want to hear that.
And so, you know, since we were already there, we were like, that's wild. Our friend Ryan, who you know, Dom, got a Rivian, was picked up from the factory and is driving it back home. And then he just magically happened to text me something about charging. And he's like, oh, I'm at the Vegas stop. I'm like, we're literally across the street. So Ryan came over. We had our whole crew there. So we had like 15, 20 people hanging around. It was awesome. And, got some pizzas and then woke up in the morning. Ryan stayed over. We had a big Airbnb. And we were like, let's go top speed on a dry lake bed. I don't know. It seems like fun. And we had an absolute blast. Really had a great time. The Taycan, this is the base Taycan, so it did 140 miles an hour. It got there. This Rivian is limited to about 115 miles per hour indicated, so we got it there. That was easy. But it was really neat to like slide the cars around and do some massive skids. And that's always my kind of thing, my kind of fun. But we did like... The Taycan felt like you could just pound it around out there all day. Like it just didn't care. But the Rivian, we kept getting it into turtle mode and it was overheating this and overheating that. And not to say it's fragile. It still had a lot of power, but definitely you can tell like brand new early thing versus Porsche, which is like, it just doesn't care. Beat the crap out of it.
Right. So what do you think? Why do you think it was overheating? Were you like 80 miles an hour and all the time or something?
Oh, no. We were like full sideways at wide open throttle doing massive skids. So okay. Motors were just sitting at, you know, pegged wide open, 800 horsepower flowing through. Connectors is a lot. And you get generate a lot of heat. Inverters get hot. Also, yeah. Because it has four motors and no locking diff, it means that the outside motor gets hot really yeah. fast because that has to go into peak power. And so I've learned after putting now 5,000 miles or so on Rivian vehicles, I don't think I like four motors, or I don't really? Mind them, but it's dumb. I'd much rather have a two motor solution with a locking differential.
What about the virtual?
They're probably telling you the truck doesn't need to be sideways the entire time either.
Well, it's more for off-roading than it is for sideways stuff.
Yeah.
Like yeah. On the Hummer, the rear axle has two motors and it virtually locks.
And it's terrible.
Yeah.
Not good. Yeah. Because we were off-roading it and we were trying the virtual locker, right? Okay. And so the idea is in order for the virtual locker to work, the wheel that's spinning has to then send a signal. Oh my God, I'm spinning. Why don't you send the power to the other wheel? And then that has to like juice up and maybe pull back this wheel speed. And so even though they're trying to virtually simulate a locking mm-hmm. differential, there still takes a half a turn of wheel speed, a wheel spin. It still takes some time for the car to figure out where to send the power to equalize the wheel speed versus mechanical locker, power down, and you just know exactly what you're going to get when you put your foot into the throttle. When mm-hmm. I had the Rivian out in Moab and I was wheeling it up some stuff, you know, right off a ledge basically, and I got a wheel in the air and I'm like progressively adding throttle, right? I'm like, well, that wheel's spinning and we're kind of going backwards for a half a second. And then it took a second for it to figure out what was right. going on. And then it accelerated up. Now, a lot of these things can be fixed with software where the car can model the actual weight, especially with Rivian, where it knows exactly where the suspension position is. And it can say, let me juice the wheel that has the wheel that's in the wheel well. But it's just not as, you know, just locked up as a true mechanical locker would be. And
they could lock it up that way though. Couldn't they put through software? Couldn't they just like set both wheels nope. in this mode, the same speed all the nope. time? Like,
because the only way that would work is you would need to know when they're out of sync. Cause you would start by saying, okay, I'm going to apply the same power to both rear motors. Then one wheel would start to spin, no longer a locked situation. And it would have to compensate. A virtual locker is just constantly playing catch up with the driving situation.
Right.
Wow. And I don't like that so much.
So also drift mode in the Rivian R1T, you said not so great.
Oh, sport mode's way driftier than drift mode.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So like you go, if you drop the Rivian in sport mode, ESP full off, you can do like 80 mile an hour, just massive skids. You could do the slow speed stuff. And then you put it in drift mode. First of all, drift mode raises the suspension to standard, which makes no sense. Why would you want a higher suspension for drift mode?
Yeah,
and it's like off-road drift mode, right? But like, okay, we were off-road and drifting. And, you know, obviously the car's higher. So you got a lot more lean going into stuff. And it definitely was not drifty in drift mode. It just kind of felt like they gave all the modes. They put a very basic tune on all of them. And then through over-the-air software updates, they're going to optimize each individual profile. And based off of our feedback, we had some confirmation from Rivian that all the engineers watched our videos, which is awesome. And then the software update, the reason I have this truck now that they sent out to the vehicles is almost entirely because of our coverage, which is kind of amazing that they basically went through all the points that we made and found and proved, and you know, either prioritized development on the stuff they were already working on, and basically just made it, which is pretty sweet. So, you know, 500 amp charging for Rivian to use that language, you know, we were the ones that brought amperage into the conversation instead of just talking about kilowatts when it comes to charging. And right. So pretty impressive to see them taking our feedback so seriously. I updated the truck. That's what I'm going to do all day today is test all these updates. But back to the original conversation, it was a blast going on a dry lake bed, and I'm going to have to clean that Taycan like you wouldn't believe. We got to pull all the panels off of it, get all, you know, cleaned back in there. It's going to be a very long and tedious process, but right,
you don't want to get Calvin mad at you, man.
No, Calvin was cool with it, but like, yeah. You know, it's just like you don't want to give back a car that's just totally dirty everywhere.
Right, right. Yeah. That'd be awful. That'd be like giving back a press car with like 2% battery or something.
Which is just ridiculous that people do that. So we always give cars back full and clean, and so we'll do the same here with the Taycan.
I've got to be honest, like cleaning a car is a great way to get to know it as well, like properly spending a day with it. It's a great way to learn the intricacies, especially if you're, you know, my neighbor has the wheels off because he likes to clean the inside of his wheels on a Sunday morning. But you know, if you're going to that level of detail and he's got the two buckets, and he's got the orbital thing and it's like, so, but that's a great way. If you love your cars, it's a great way of actually, you know, pulling some panels off and having a look at things and seeing how it works. So that's no bad thing.
No, I'm going to love it. We got the lift anyway, right? So I could just get it up on the lift, hose it out, and then push everything out of the garage. It's going to be totally fine.
So going back to the Jeep Magneto 2.0 for a second, so what you're saying is maybe with this one motor through the traditional drivetrain kind of thing might be the way to go for Jeep. Maybe it's like the most capable.
It's not the best for an EV. I think you just do a motor on each axle, which is probably what they would end up doing with like an Eaton locker in the motor itself, in the gear train.
Seems like you can get plenty of horsepower out of a dual motor setup too. So yeah, I agree. If you could, their traditional knowledge from having a T case and stick axles on it, I think is going to go further than others. But yeah, all that's interesting. Although a Wrangler is not really drifty.
No, it's not meant for that. It's meant for crawling. The weird thing with a dual motor solution, though, that Jeep may not like is it's pretty hard to control front and rear wheel speed separately. Like you don't have a center locking situation. It'd be the same as a virtual locker that simulates the center diff. And I was actually just up with the guys who engineered all of Jeep's transfer case technology. We were in the labs where they had like a whole bunch of cool stuff. It was pretty neat. And so I didn't really talk to them much about how an electric motor setup would work for their application, but definitely transfer case, having a center locker is a huge benefit off-road.
Sure. I'm also certain they're not going to have the battery cells stacked up like pizza boxes underneath the hood, but
right. Yeah, no.
Looks cool.
Yeah. Well, I guess too, without the traditional powertrain layer or the drivetrain layout, at least you want to change the like universal joints. I don't know if anyone else has had this problem, but I've changed so many universal joints on my truck, my four-wheel drive Ranger. It's like over 50,000 miles. I don't know, maybe 3-4 times, like all the center. Oh man, it was always a huge friggin' deal. Anyway, so what else are we going to talk about?
Model X dual motor. Do you want to talk about that? Have you got time?
But Kyle, did you mention, maybe your video isn't out on this yet, you did a race on CCS and Tesla superchargers?
Yeah, the video's not out yet. It's going through the editing process. But yeah, drove the new updated Model X just recently. This was one of the cars that competed. Friend of ours here in town who's a TikToker called Tesla Flex. We invited him to join. He's starting to do some more stuff with us. Awesome guy. And basically it was the most amount of people I've ever had in a car for review. We loaded every seat in the car with a dog. So we had six people and a dog and reviewed the Model X, you know, with every, you know, the whole out of spec team in there. It was great. And the thing's awesome. Like it's just a great car, but like it had mega software issues, which have now been fixed as of yesterday. We had to keep resetting the car. Every time a camera came up, the whole thing would freeze, which was wild. And, you know, autopilot only lets you go 80 instead of 90, like the radar cars can do. And so, you know, some things worse, but like primarily overall build quality, the thing felt solid. It's pretty quick, handles really well. And the doors worked all week, which is amazing. So, you know,
For a few days in a row, they got the doors to work.
They got the doors to work.
That seems like a low bar. I don't know.
Consecutive days.
It is a low bar. That's a horrible low bar.
Hey, I remember early days of Model X. We went, my best friend got his Model X and we were picking it up. Literally, it was one of the first ones. It was like VIN 800. I don't remember. But we're at the delivery center and we close the door and it breaks off its mount and slams into the side of the car. So, you know, the fact that it worked is pretty damn cool.
Yeah. I mean, they've been making these for a while now, so they ought to work. It looks like a white car originally, and they put a nice wrap on it.
It's a wrap.
I like the wrap.
Okay. I'm not sure I like the wrap so much, but that's all right.
We're watching your YouTube footage of the doors opening and closing here on the for the people who are listening to us right now.
Basically, the car has so many small updates over the years that it's almost an entirely different car than it was back in 2016. Everything feels different. Everything sounds different. Two permanent magnet motors now. That's really weird to me.
Really?
With no clutch disconnect, but still magically efficient. I don't know how they do it. And so, you know, unless they're just lying, because literally in the car breakdown, it says permanent magnet front and rear motor. And we are all like, I don't get that. But when you drive it, it kind of feels that way. And it's very interesting. And did not win our race to Vegas, but it's still a great car.
Did not win the race to Vegas? I mean, CCS versus Tesla Supercharger?
Well, we had some other Teslas too. And we had some CCS cars. I don't know if we'll give away the order. I think we already did on the Out of Spec podcast. So that's okay. We'll give it away.
Don't tell us here, but if you want to get, you know, you want a sneak preview, I guess you can tune into the Out of Spec podcast. And
sure. We'll do it that way. That's fine. Basically, it's not shocking to any of us who won.
Okay. Did you have a pad?
I want to point out this wasn't just like an all-out race, because I don't think you mentioned everybody had a speed limit. They couldn't just – it wasn't just a race.
To test the networks, not driving, right? So no more than 5 miles an hour over the speed limit. And so for the first couple hundred miles, it was funny. We're like all in the same place. And, you know, each one of us just driving incredibly aggressively but not accelerating. We pissed everyone off. Because we're like, oh, there's a spot, get it. Here's a spot, get that one. And, you know, the speed limit would go from 65 to 75, and it was wide open throttle for a half a second just to gain every last little drop. We had an absolute blast with it. And, five cars, no more than five over. Some people were more competitive than others. Basically, it was not a surprise to me. The order was exactly as I expected it to come into. But according to a Twitter poll I ran before we did this, it should break the internet.
Oh, awesome. Cool. Can you say what the five cars are?
Yeah, we had a Taycan, a Model X, a Model 3, an Ioniq 5, and a Mustang Mach-E.
Oh. I like this comment. By the way, just going back to that washing your car thing, cars are like cows. Only weirdos wash them.
I subscribe to that statement. That's good.
Why not? Sure. It's Friday.
I should have saved that for comment of the week for next week. That was great.
Strong contender.
Like cows.
All right. So before we move on, Clint, we did mention that you also, you just picked up a BMW iX yesterday or the day before or something. So have you had a chance to drive it?
I didn't buy one. Picked up. That scared me for a second.
Right, right. Sorry. No, picked up.
I can see the front of that car. I wouldn't buy one, unfortunately.
Really?
Man,
is it black?
So good.
Right.
What color is it?
It's Iron Man spec. It's the crimson red, the bronze titanium accents going on. 22-inch wheels. The interior looks like a 70s GM product with just like plum-ish, I don't even know, magenta interior. It is
burgundy.
Wild. But you know what? I won't go to the grill too much because I have it parked right there facing the wall, so it's actually fine. But the rest of the car is so good. And I was actually laughing at, you know, Kyle saying, oh my God, like the build quality is way up on the Model X. Those people at Tesla have another thing coming for them too. And I know I've talked about this with Tom too, but that car at the iX is wonderful. I mean, they took some real chances on that interior. We'll have a full review coming out soon on the Inside EV's YouTube channel, that and several others. But I'm so pleased with just experiencing that car. The mileage seems great. Tons and tons of power. I think they're doing – this is the iX50M, I believe. Okay. And I've heard that they're doing a 60M, if not an iXM.
Yep.
Which, I mean, we drive a lot of fast cars, but you punch that thing, there's 0% of me that's like, oh, yeah, this needs more horsepower. But it kind of actually made me think that the traditional, like, M cars, AMGs, the electric equivalents of it don't really need to exist because the standard versions of those EVs are already fast. Kyle already mentioned earlier that sometimes when you get an electric car sideways, bad things happen no matter what. It's not like an AMG version or an M version is going to weigh any less. So you're just adding more power, which the tires can't really take.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
I don't want to talk about that on a Friday, as I say it out loud.
Yeah, I think we'll still have performance versions of these cars, because if you look at the iX M60, pretty spicy meatball. I mean, I drove the 50 as well, like you have here, but I had a better spec. It was blacked out, so the grill wasn't a big deal. And yeah, so you got to get it black. You gotta, iX.
You got to put a picture on Twitter, Clint. I was just went to your thing.
Okay.
I want to see what it looks like.
Not on there.
I guess you're not a fan of the grill.
Sorry.
You're not a fan of the grill. You don't think it's good,
but Clint, doesn't that thing just drive magically silent?
It's so good.
Quiet.
You know, when we will film the review on Monday with this, but you know, Tom and I have discussed like the pricing of it, although the one I have is $104,000 American dollars. The starting price actually makes sense compared to a Model X. You don't get a third row of seats, but as an electric SUV, it's fantastic. It really, really is. I'm so pleased with it. BMW doesn't always like to take chances, but for a, you know, especially compared to an i4, which just looks so mundane to me, it's super cool. Very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, totally agree. I absolutely love it. Last week on the podcast, we talked about BMW had an iX and i4 launch event nationwide on April 6th. And one of our local dealers asked me to go and introduce the cars to the crowd and talk a little bit about i4 and iX. And, you know, it was so funny how, you know, people just walking around them, looking at them, everyone was looking at the i4 because it's the performance sedan, you know, and the iX, as you mentioned, you know, it's, you know, it especially if you're coming out the front, it doesn't have the best outward styling. But I was
dignified.
Person after person, I was standing there saying, like, I've driven both of these cars. I love the i4. I'm not saying it was a bad driving experience. I actually think BMW impressed me more that on the i4 than I was expecting. But I love this iX, and this is what I would buy if I had enough money to buy it and was looking for this type of a vehicle, because it just did everything so well. And as you said, the cabin is so quiet. In my opinion, driving cars, the e-tron was the quietest experience of any EV up until I drove the iX. I think the iX even did better than the e-tron, and it's just such a peaceful, quiet cabin, even at like 70, 80, 90 miles an hour. I don't know how they really isolated the wind noise as well as they did, but BMW did a great job and such a great driving experience. And just to talk about that big grill in the front a little bit, now I don't like it either, but one thing that's really cool about it, it's polyethylene that is self-healing. Did you go into talking about that? It's so cool. When we did the drive, the guy from BMW took like a knife and scratch the heck out of it, and then takes a blow dryer and blows it, the thing just goes nice and smooth again. You couldn't see any of the scratches. And so rock chips and stuff like that. And it'll self-heal if it's hot out, like in the summer, if it's warm. It'll just do that itself. You have to take a blow dryer.
So you're not
going to
have a bunch of motors standing around with hair dryers or nothing then.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying you need some heat gun or something. If it was cold out and it just kind of melts together. And you can't even see like a little line from where the scratch was. I think that's a little bit of a redeeming feature, but it's got.
I can't see it either because I have a blanket over the front of the car taped down to it, and that's how we're going to review it too. Because if you just get rid of that first 20%, the rest of it is so good.
I think the grill is like, it's just like almost like a selling point. It's like belligerent almost, right? It's like in your face and boom, I'm here. You can't not notice me.
No, you're thinking Hummer EV. This is just, why are you near me?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen it in person yet myself. So I think we have
a we'll fly on out here and film it with me on Monday.
Yeah. You're in Florida. Okay. What are you talking about, Dominic? Just go take the Spark on a road trip.
Clint's in California.
Oh, you're in Cali now. I totally forgot. Right. Sorry.
Yeah. He's in LA. Oh my God. Yeah.
Martin has 12 days off for the holiday. Maybe he can come and
yeah, you want to come and work in Europe? We never work anyway. We're just always on a holiday. So
I love it. That's the way it should be.
All right. Should we talk about some news?
Yeah, go on.
All right. So Genesis has revealed the concept coupe this week, the Genesis X Speedium Coupe, to be exact. And it It looks so great. I thought it would be worth talking about for at least a second here. We did talk about a very similar concept they showed last year that everyone seemed to like, and I dare say this one looks even better. I like the front end treatment, but I don't know. Clint, tell me why I'm wrong.
We have a Genesis X video on Motor One, Dom, if you want to pull up a little bit of footage. But I'm the weird one out here. This sort of shooting break, different style, I don't think looks as good as the Genesis X concept. And it's weird to me how similar these are to each other. It's the same paint color. It's the same general shape of it. Overall, I think the styling is wonderful, but the more traditional coupe layout, Genesis X, does it for me a little bit more than this does. This looks like an old, like a Jag E-Pace with a hard top on it kind of vibes. Cool. I don't know what you do with it, though. I don't think anybody wants a car in this shape, at least not in the United States of America.
I don't know. I'm looking at this profile views now. It's fastback. So basically, this is a fastback version of the one they showed last year, right?
Yeah. If there's a hard side angle picture in there somewhere, the shape of the roof or the how much it rakes is very different. The wing on this it's for people that you want to enjoy the back seat, I guess.
Right, at least, yeah, thinking of the back seat headroom space, I guess.
Wheels look great. Those look closer to potentially production than Genesis X had. People love Genesis concepts. Any Hyundai, Kia, Genesis concept gets a ton of attention, and rightfully so. I mean, they're the best designers in the game at the moment, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm like, Kyle, you love concept cars.
No.
You're not down with this at all?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll talk about when it gets made, if.
Right.
The thing is, but they've got a bit of form in being quite faithful from their concepts over the last few years to production cars. So they've not been a million miles away. So it'd be interesting to see what compromises have to be made.
Yeah, GV80 wasn't far off from, you know, concept to production. They're decent at it.
GV80 looks awesome. I parked next to one the other day and I was like, whoa, let me move over. I feel poor. Sorry. Like, I just like, let me give you some room. Yeah. Thing is imposing.
Nice. And you know what's crazy? For me, the only thing Genesis has missed on in the last 2 years is GV60.
Totally agree.
Looks like hot compared to Ioniq 5 and EV6. Totally agree. And my working theory on this is, if people weren't familiar with all three of those cars and you yank the badges off of all three, nobody could tell you that the Genesis was the premium product.
Except for the little rear window thing that they got going on.
Does that one get a rear wiper? Because maybe people will buy it because of that.
I don't think it does. I saw one in person, though, and it's definitely bigger than I expected. It seems to be the biggest of the bunch.
Okay. They all three pull that trick on you. It's just all wheelbase and no overhang. But I don't know. This just disappointed me so much. I know the interior has some cool stuff going on, but Ioniq 5 and EV6 look absolutely insane. And I just don't think that this ever had a chance of looking more premium than those two.
Yeah, I guess which one would you go for of the three, Clint?
Thus far, having driven two of the three, Ioniq 5, but that's just because I'm preferential to the styling. Although same we got here. More looks in the EV6 around LA, which is telling. Yeah. Huh.
Maybe because Ioniq 5's already kind of been out for a little bit and EV6 was a couple of months later.
EV6 is such an oddball looking, especially from the back, you know, just like grabs your attention, you know, you can't.
Yeah, we just had 2 weeks with EV6 and, yeah, basically, I didn't like it nearly as much as Ioniq 5. I just have a visitor here. I'll be right back.
Sure.
Yeah, and I'm going to round out the trio. I've driven both of them, as Kyle and Clint have, and I'm definitely in the Ioniq 5 camp also. And, you know, probably for Clint's mostly styling. I love the styling. But also, Clint, you know, it's kind of more of the luxurious drive, like if the suspension's a little softer, it might not handle quite as good as the EV6, but I think it just, to me, it felt like it had a better ride, a softer ride, and I'm not getting that vehicle, either one of them, to be my sports sedan or sports coupe. So
I don't know if anybody's told you, Tom, but there are 2 years of free charging with the Hyundai Ioniq 5 if that incentivizes you anymore.
Yeah, I
know. I don't want to spoil the review because it's coming out soon on Inside EVs, but the EV6 rear-wheel drive was not the driver's car I wanted it to be at all, and it's almost completely a matter of tires. I'm curious to drive the dual motor version. It's a sort of an unfair comparison because I had dual motor Ioniq 5 and single motor EV6, but the driving dynamics of EV6, which everybody has sort of said were stellar, I didn't get that at all.
It's different for the dual motor and the rear wheel.
Yeah,
right.
Clint, did you see my first drive review of the EV6? Because on the
I
first
watch all
drive,
your stuff, Tom, we got to approve it.
Half the day we drove the rear wheel drive. Half the day we drove the all wheel drive. And part of my review, I kind of went on maybe a little bit too much on how I enjoyed the all wheel drive, but was really disappointed by the rear wheel drive. Now I expected it to be a notch lower, but I felt the driving experience was three notches lower.
Well, and, I'm glad we're on the same page because I should re-rack my statement a little bit. Traditionally, you think of a rear-wheel drive sports car that's lighter, less complex. Mm-hmm. There should be a lot of goodness going on, but it just felt,
how I felt.
It's, I think, a $4,000 commitment to go from rear-wheel drive to all-wheel drive, and I almost never advocate for spending more money on a car than you need to, but I would push people to get into the all-wheel drive version of either car.
Well, Kyle, did you drive all-wheel drive EV6?
Yep.
Okay. So I know you really, really love the dynamics of the Ioniq 5. How would you – the EV6, Ioniq 5 dynamics, all-wheel drive, that much different?
I didn't actually spend too much time in the EV6 that we had. I did in Europe. I spent more time with it. But again, that was a Euro-tuned car and not the U.S.
Yeah.
So I drove the one that we had around for maybe 30 miles. But that was during the Rivian week when I was doing all the Rivian stuff. So everyone else was doing all the other things. And I really wanted to take it up in the canyons for a hard blast to see how it would do. I know Jordan, who's also been on this podcast before, took it out and ripped it a little bit. And he said it was awesome. He said better than Ioniq 5. You know, Nears makes no difference, really.
Was it dual motor or single motor?
Dual motor. Yeah.
Okay.
We haven't driven any of the single motor variants yet. My dad has, actually. So we're going to try and get a single motor somewhere one day, somehow, because they're not in the media fleets of Ioniq 5, to do a comparison. One of the guys who works for us has an Ioniq 5 dual motor. We want to do a rear wheel drive because the EPA numbers are so massively spread apart. I don't know how much that actually translates to the real world, though.
I think it's a 30 or so mile penalty, at least on paper. Is that correct?
Right, which makes no sense to me because it's the same rear motor and it disconnects the front.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the mileage penalty and the couple thousand dollars on top of it, I think the dual motor is just a much better driving vehicle.
Yeah.
I'm really interested to drive EV6 GT at some point.
Ooh, I think the spicy one?
We need to stop naming electric cars the same damn thing as each other because people are already confused enough. ID3, ID4, Ioniq 5, EV6, i7 is coming soon. This is getting ridiculous.
A lot of eyes. Yeah. Man.
How about Taycan Turbo, Clint?
We're having some stuff with Lucid coming up too, and I'm looking at the prices on those cars, as phenomenal as they are. It's like it's a different world when you're spending six figures.
I have a friend that has a Lucid, and he says it's just the buggiest software he's ever had in his car.
Wow.
Well, we should be into one for the Inside EVs channel in the next few weeks, and some more Rivian content coming up.
Yeah.
So
hell yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I'm curious about that software thing. I've heard similar things, and that's not really what you don't want that in a premium experience, but that is
just at least the door shut on it.
Right. But that's a low bar, man. Yeah. And that was why, Model X, I haven't really heard any issues with Gold or what do you call Falcon Wing doors in forever. It's like,
They've gotten a lot better, but this Model X had, at least when I drove it, a million trillion software glitches. And it's the new ChargePort door cars. Then they just sent a software update. And according to Brandon, who was over here yesterday, fixed every single one of them.
Okay.
So that's the nice thing about Tesla is I at least have confidence they'll fix their stuff when it's broken with other
software related things.
Yeah. Software related with other automakers. you have no idea their rollout. I mean, Rivian is doing it pretty well so far, but we're still unsure of how others are going to be sending software updates.
Hey, can I work in something random here to make my boss happy on a Friday that he told us all yesterday? The most over the, if this is common knowledge, I'm sorry. If I were to say, like, which OEM to you has the most OTA capable cars on the road, what would you say?
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier, but do you want to specify just infotainment system or to every module on the vehicle?
Oh,
it depends on how specific you want to go. But the broad answer
OTA is not useful unless it updates the car.
Yeah, OTA like stereo adjustments. Man, you know, I don't really care. If you can just, like,
I thought it would have been Tesla by a long shot, but apparently it's BMW.
At least according to BMW.
According to BMW.
According to BMW, they claim we can update your maps wirelessly.
Yeah. Yeah. From a 6 series from 2017, which I'm sure everybody's using the navigation on that on a daily basis.
Right. But Tesla's had software updates since 2012.
Yeah.
Yeah. They really pioneered that.
They just weren't making a lot of vehicles back then to pile them up.
Right. You know? Right.
Yeah.
That's a dumb.
But Model 3's been around since
2016
or 17, too, right? Is it 2018 was first model year?
Oh, 17 for Model 3?
I mean, that's when they started stacking up VIN numbers.
It was 2017, but only a few cars were built. And then 2018 was the big ramp.
Got it.
That was a big hell. But you can always
spot a 2017 Model 3 if it has an Alcantara headliner and chrome buttons, chrome Tesla logo on the steering wheel.
And the glass roof reflects differently with the water droplets.
And that was the end of 2018. Stuff,
Yeah.
The early cars are all different. I just drove we did another video that's coming out soon with a brand new 2022 Model 3 performance from an owner who had a 2019. And massive changes to that car, kind of not in good ways. It's way softer than it used to be. So, like, you're going into corners and you're like in Hummer EV mode now.
Wow.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. It should be the way the dual motor should be. But, like, the Model 3 and Model Y always ride way too harshly, in my opinion. But, like, keep the performance version that way. And then they really softened the performance version for the new one.
They don't have adaptive suspension on those yet, right?
No.
That's the thing. They should be able. That should be a software thing. You know, you should have a choice. You know,
but it's a lot of money to put in active damper.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, but
that's actually where the performance versions of EVs will be, because the standard versions of EVs are going to be quick enough in a straight line. But I think that's probably the way forward, because as we've talked about here before, you know, AMG was a byword for, you know, just noisy and aggressive, and you know, and what do you do in EV world when you can't recreate that AMG-ness? And it's probably to do what things like Polestar did with the performance pack, with the airlines dampers. It's probably to forget speed and forget all the theater, and it's probably to offer tunability. That's probably where the performance packs are going to go with EVs, because it's the only way to differentiate, because nobody is going to want to mess around with their ride apart from the 1%, and that's who are going to pay for extra for these performance cars. So that's probably the way they'll go with it. And Tesla should have that as an option, really, on their cars, but I don't know.
I mean, they charge enough for them that they could do that.
Yeah.
And completely as Tom predicted, we're talking about the Model Y coming out of Texas, completely as predicted, the first cars going to staff, as we've seen that. It was either on Reddit, and then we ran the story by saying, hey, it's not confirmed, but one of the people who on their LinkedIn profile is an engineer. She's an engineer at Tesla. So you take that at face value, and she's had her Model Y made in Texas, structural battery delivered, but we don't know any more about that. So we're kind of piecing it together with things like the EPA docs and stuff like that. So exactly as predicted, those cars going to staff, first of all. They can do a few hundred of those, I imagine, from staff. Ten thousand odd work at Fremont. They want to get 5,000 working at Tesla. So at Texas, there's probably enough people in the company that want a new Model Y that maybe it's been hanging on, that can now order one.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what that car is like. That's very interesting.
And staff are going to be much more flexible in terms of nailing those early problems, which are going to come from a new
home. I actually think it's a smart idea. Give your staff the early cars first.
Yeah, that's
Rivian did it. I think it was to their advantage. And Yeah, it's a great way to like weed out problems without getting all the bad press everywhere.
And they won't, and the staff won't. There was that guy a few weeks ago who worked at Tesla, and he took his FSD beta YouTube channel and put a critical video online, got fired the next day. Because it's like, well, if that's in your contract of employment that you can't. Oh, I think it had, there's two sides, aren't there? He said he'd had like verbal warnings and stuff, but hey.
Something free speech.
So he put a video on and
drove right into a pole. So
yeah, that was a pretty. It was a pretty bad video of FSD beta. Just I don't know.
I didn't see it. What actually? It actually crashed into a pole.
It hit a blue bollard that was separating the lane from a cycle lane. It was the size of a small. It was as if a small child had walked in front of the car, and the car was like, "Nope, I'm going that way." And he posted it, and I don't know.
I mean, it's not self-driving. He's still responsible, regardless of course, what they call it.
But that's dumb.
Self-driving.
Like, he works for the company out of everyone. You should know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would take that video and take it to somebody in that department and be like, this is really bad, but I wouldn't have put it on YouTube. But there we go. So, yeah, selling those first Model Ys, really smart move to staff, because they'll, you know, when they break down and when they don't work...
I'm really curious about the structural pack and the battery charging with the 4680 cells and everything. I can't wait to get our hands on one of those things, or get Kyle or Tom's hands on one of those things. Mm-hmm. All right. So this is actually my favorite story of the week. Apparently Volkswagen is saying its MEB-based vehicles are getting huge improvements soon at the UBS Paris Electric Day on the 12th. Its chief marketing officer for the ID family of electric vehicles shared a presentation about the future of VW's EV programs. And one of them states that the cars will have up to 700 kilometers of range. That's 435 miles WLTP. So our EPA range, you know, will be lower. Over 200 kilowatts of peak charging power, and acceleration of up to 5.5 seconds, 0 to 100 kilometers, or 62 miles an hour with all-wheel drive. These are all things that will keep demand high for them. The only issue is they didn't specify the timing of the improvements. So, Tom, do you think this is just down to a better battery supply coming online, or maybe one with more energy density, but also with better voltage, with a better voltage sag profile?
I don't know if there's just one thing that you'll pin it to, Dom. I think Volkswagen's making improvements to the MEB platform all around, and all these little incremental changes are going to add up to the next generation. That's going to be better. And I remember when I went to the original MEB media tour, when we went and toured Volkswagen's factory, and they showed us the whole platform. God, it was probably 3 or 4 years ago. I'm not sure exactly how far it was. You know, they had said at the time, you know, look down the road 3 or 4 years, we're going to have the next generation. It's going to go further. It's going to charge faster. So, you know, they've been working on this from day one. It certainly doesn't surprise me. They do need to up their charging power. You see there on the screen for those that are watching on YouTube, greater than 200 kilowatt. That is definitely one of the, if you want to call it, weak points. The ID4, ID3, they don't charge poorly, don't get me wrong, but they don't charge great. They could definitely do better. And I think, you know, as we've said many times here, that how quickly you can recharge the car is as important as how far it can go on a single charge. Because if the car can only go 200 or 250 miles per charge, let's say, you're not at a disadvantage on vehicles that can drive further if it's just a 10 or 15 minute stop to put back 150 miles in the battery. And you get that with that high charging power at low state of charge. If you can plug in at a low state of charge and only stay there for 15, 20 minutes, you can throw back, you know, 150, 200 miles into the pack. And that's really important. So I hope that looks like that's the direction they're going in. And great to hear. I'm curious to see when they're talking about this. You know, when are these enhancements going to come out?
I'm surprised, because the next platform they're coming with, SSP, which is the unified cells from China, and their own factories and the Northvolt deal and stuff, and then and that will underpin all of their EVs, and that starts from 2024. 2026. You know, that's 2 years away. So kind of surprised that they're looking to improve MEB rather than focusing on talking up the latest, greatest thing. But delighted that they're going to, because that's still, look, 2 years in EV world, as we all know, as you all know, watching and listening to this, like 2 years is a lifetime in terms of how quickly these things are changing. So probably really, if they can do it, and then have another couple of model years with these enhanced specs, and then we get the new platform underpinning all of their cars, apart from the real high-performance Porsches and Audis, then that's probably makes a lot of sense, I would say.
So this is going to happen pretty soon, then, you're saying, because the new platform is going to be under everything? Or aren't they going to keep MEB for a while yet?
MEB is around till 2024. We heard it was last March. It was a year ago, just over a year ago. And then SSP comes in from 2024 with the new unified cell. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be this year, surely. Then you get two model years under that with MEB in sort of version 2.0 or 1.5.
Maybe they just won't have new
models. They switch to Trinity platform.
Yes. Yeah. So that is it. So that is Trinity is the first car on this. Trinity is the name they're using for this first car on it.
So new models will have the new Trinity, but they'll still be making ID4s and like the bus and all that's the ID Buzz. Still be on the ID platform.
I don't see them retiring MEB so quickly. They're still building.
I wouldn't be so sure about that.
They're still building factories around it, but hey, if those factories are flexible to move, you know.
Yeah, move, I mean, MEB didn't go over quite as well as any of them would have wanted. So I think they know
They're selling it all that they can make. I mean, it's.
Yeah, I think the key is the integrated that because they've moved Herbert Diess to run the software and services or oversee that. And it looks like that is reading between the lines, the admission from VW that perhaps the MEB integrated package wasn't of Tesla's level. Certainly the early cars, you know, they're still calling them back to dealers to be plugged in before they can get an over-the-air update. They have to have an update at the dealer to get over-the-air update. So, yeah, maybe they've decided, hang on a minute, we need to get this right a second time around. I'm being kind, I think.
But I think with these improvements, so, I mean, it sounds like a pretty awesome platform. So 435 miles at WLTP, that would be, what, 380 miles a rate? That's awesome, man. I don't know.
Yeah, for an average family car.
You could sell that forever, I would think. I don't know why you'd want to like throw that out and just switch over everything to like a new platform right away. Mm. But anyway, that short timeline means that this is coming soon then, right?
It has to. I would think so. I would guess.
Awesome. That would be awesome.
It would be, I think it'd be this year.
Wow, really?
So. Well, we've got early. Yeah, I mean, we've got some big improvements coming that we still haven't had yet, like the vehicle to home with the version 3 software, which is going to be making sure that vehicle to grid and vehicle to home, with obviously VW's hardware on the side of your garage wall, is turned on alongside plug and charge for all those cars. So they've still got a pretty big step to go first this year.
They're activating in Europe is not necessarily the same as the US market, especially for ID Buzz. They're not yet certain out of all that. Like in Europe, you guys also get like crowdsourced information for all of your ADAS features, which you don't get in the US. So there's strange differences between Europe and over here. But they said that plug and charge capability should be from the get-go on ID Buzz.
Plug and charge is great.
So let me ask you guys a question. One of the comments here came in. Amit said, let's put this out. How much range is good for an EV, considering cold weather usage reduces 20 to 30%? Let's all do this. Martin, go first.
I think 400 miles is the sweet spot, because then when it's cold and, you know, you've got some challenging conditions, you're still doing 250 miles. You know, reasonable. So I'd say 400 miles is an absolute, not even the sweet spot. 400 is the maximum.
Yeah, no, talking sweet spot. Like, what do you think? Because as you know, a 400-mile battery is going to dramatically raise the price of the vehicle for the masses. Can't afford that. Like, you know, you're making an EV now and you're trying to sell to as many people possible. What's your balance between cost and range?
I think you've got to hit a number beginning with 3. So I'll say 301.
Dom?
I 350. Just, I feel like that's a great number.
Kyle?
I think we're going to see a trend towards shorter range city EVs, primarily taking over in urban environments. So I would say if you have access to home charging and this is just a commuting vehicle like we use our smart car for, that has 51 miles of EPA range. And even in the middle of winter in the coldest environment, we were charging it once a week. So it totally depends on your driving use case. And that would be a super inexpensive way to go. Also, if anyone knows a way to get a Citroen AMI imported to the U.S. on the topic, please let me know.
I'm working on it for you. Come on, I'm working on it.
I'm ready. I will do whatever it takes.
Clint, okay. You don't come from the EV side like the rest of us do, really. Maybe you have a good perspective on this. What do you think should be, like, say, what's acceptable?
Well, with everything so expensive these days, I'm an advocate for vehicle affordability above all else. Having driven a lot of electric things lately, I would say 250. I haven't thought about it, but I liked where Kyle's head is at, and I actually do think that when the infrastructure is there, they'll reduce the size of the battery packs, they'll increase the charging speeds, and you'll have a city car with 150 miles of range that you could potentially charge in, 5 to 10 minutes, talking future. And you have a charging station everywhere, because that it doesn't work unless you have that access. I mean, every damn gas station in the country should have EV charging at it too, as a means of selling energy to consumers. So when the grid is there, I think you can reasonably have an EV with 200 miles or less and nobody would stress about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're on the same page with that. I think that, and we've been saying this for a long time, as infrastructure improves, as charging times improve, I think we're going to see a pullback on the range, because that will make the vehicles much more affordable. And if it's super easy and super quick to recharge the vehicles, then, you don't need to drag around a 400, mile battery. So I'm going to go with, me personally, 225 is perfect, but I understand that for most people moving into this space now, they're going to be afraid by that. You also have to factor in that most OEMs recommend not charging to 100%. So now let's say you're at 80%, and then in the winter you lose another 25%. Now you're way down under 150. So I'm going to say 275, I think, is really the sweet spot for me in today's market with today's infrastructure. Fast forward 5, 6, 7 years, I think that's going to pull down to the 225-ish range, and I think people will be comfortable with that.
Or you're going to see charging stations get massively filled up, and we're going to try and skip as many as possible and go full Lucid Air 500 mile.
Mercedes, you guys really, brought up that issue in a way that I think is going to become a lot more prevalent too. Everybody and their mom is offering free charging now because you have to stay competitive with your competition. And every EA station is going to be filled with, I just got my fill in the blank, and it's free, so I'm going to be here for 2 years.
So EA needs to, if you make that kind of a deal with the EA, you also need to give them a whole whack of money so they can open some more stations to deal with the extra demand that you're creating, basically.
We're not seeing that so much.
Yeah, it's. I think in the next 3 to 5 years, we're going to see this be an issue. But I also think that we're going to hit that point in about 3 to 4 years. EV adoption is going to go crazy, but so is infrastructure, because many people are holding off with this massive infrastructure deployment because they know there's no way they can make money now. They don't want to sink a ton of money into the ground without having a ton of vehicles on the road, number one, and the concern that when adoption takes off, they might have old tech. So they're kind of holding back, waiting for that 2025, 2026 time to really just go all on. And this new infrastructure bill is pouring tons of money into it. So I think that's going to sort itself out. I do think we're going to have issues in the next 5 years or so. But I do think once we get beyond that point, you're going to see such an incredibly massive infrastructure deployment in this country the second half of this decade that I think it's going to make a lot of those problems go away. We'll see. But, I think it's just going to be incredible. The 2024 to 2029 timeframe, those 5 years, it's going to be like the New Deal. I mean, you're going to see high-speed DC fast chargers installed everywhere. All the major chains, McDonald's, Burger King, Chipotle, they're all going to want to have them on their property because they're not going to want to mess up that. So that's private enterprise. Then you're going to have public getting involved with that. So I mean, it's just gonna explode. We're gonna have
3 to 5 years of.
It's going to be difficult for the next few years because we're going to outpace the infrastructure coming up right now. As Kyle's been saying, this is the golden years of charging. He's right. He's right. And it's we're hitting the point where it's ending now, and it's going to be a difficult run for the next a few years. And these damn free charging programs aren't helping it. They're only exasperating the issue.
You know, we just had to buy a combustion car for filming stuff because we can't rely on rolling up with a couple EVs and knowing stations are going to be open when we're doing these road trip shoots. So our new camera car is fully combustion, and we're not going to drive it every day, but it's just one of the things we need to do to film the EV stuff.
All right. Hey, let's pick this up again next week. I think that brings us to the end of our show. I did want to mention that the Ford F-150 Lightning is getting its own launch event coming up pretty soon. The circle on your calendar, April 26th, electric at the Ford's Rouge Electric Vehicle Center in Dearborn, Michigan at 1:30. And they're going to have a separate live stream thing at 9 o'clock that evening for new owners, future owners to get to know their upcoming electric pickup truck better.
That's very smart. And if they haven't already hired Tom to present it, they absolutely should. But to have live streams for the 150,000 odd people who are in the queue, that's a really smart way of just getting people just through the next few months, and in some case years, until their vehicle arrives, and just talking to them about what do you want to know about this new car we've made. So having an exclusive live stream, and I'm sure that'll be recorded, and maybe it'll even be publicly put on YouTube or streamed, but it's a really smart, customer-focused way. I'm really impressed with the way Ford is heading at the moment.
Yeah, I got my invite to that event at the Rouge Center. Nice. But I have to decline. I'm going to be on a plane flying to Spain with Lexus.
That's right.
And your Spain.
We're putting him to work.
Yeah, for the amazing RZ450E.
I was going to ask if you can plus one me there, but I guess not.
I think if I had gotten the Ford invite first, I might have taken that one up. But it just came in like a couple of days ago. So Ford seems like maybe this wasn't something they planned too far in advance, or that I think they would have sent out the invites to the owners a little, giving us a little bit more room. It's only giving us a week notice or 10 days notice, but maybe they did that so not a lot of people would overwhelm them, and accept them up on the offer. So.
Also want to mention that Nissan has revealed its 2023 Leaf. So it's updated its styling a little bit and simplified the trim lineup. It's still, it's a Nissan Leaf, but that's, an affordable electric vehicle. And that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. If you're watching us on YouTube, don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Clint, you are at where?
First
are
name,
you at?
Last name. I make it easy.
Clint Simone. At Clint Simone. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao. Thanks.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQBar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQBar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.